Welcome, listeners, to KPTZ's coverage of the 2016 Port Townsend Film Festival. This is your friendly neighborhood interviewer, Marcia Pearlstein. What follows are a series of interviews to whet your appetite for the festival on September 23rd to 25th, this very year, 2016. The full program is on the festival website, www.ptfilmfest.com. Featuring 98 films of extensive range of fiction and documentaries, our outdoor evenings, live interviews with actors, producers, and directors, as well as some new and special additions, filmgoers may treat themselves to an extensive range of activities. Special thanks to our indefatigable and intrepid executive director, Jeanette Force, master programmer, Jane Julian, and all-around central organizer, Victoria O'Donnell. Here come the interviews. You're listening to 91.9 FM, KPTZ, Port Townsend. This is Marcia Pearlstein, your friendly neighborhood interviewer, and I'm speaking with Jonathan Kaiser. Jonathan is a native of Halifax, Nova Scotia, a filmmaker, musician, and sound designer. He holds a Bachelor of Music in Classical Double Bass Performance from McGill University. Jonathan, let's just get the backstory of the film, sort of what inspired you to do this film, and could you tell the listener a little bit about what they can expect when they come to see What Would Beethoven Do?
Well, What Would Beethoven Do follows a number of musical renegades who are kind of shaking up the classical music era as we know it and trying to bring it to a wider audience because, you know, most people, when they think of classical music, they think of slow or old or stuffy or out of reach to, you know, the general population. But in actuality, it really isn't. And it's a very, very accessible and emotional art form. You know, music has always been a huge part of my life. My father was a musician, and I ended up, you know, going into a career as a classical double bassist. But at some point, I was really dismayed by how inaccessible classical music can seem to those not directly involved with it. So when I started to foray as a career into film, I decided that this would be a perfect subject to start with. So this is my first feature-length documentary. I'm excited to have it in Port Townsend, and hopefully people will enjoy it just as you have.
Are you planning to be here for the film festival?
I will be here, along with our cinematographer, Arjun Kamath, and myself. We will be present. So,
you know, you break down all kinds of stereotypes. You break down the stereotypes of classical music being stodgy, but also, to me, one of the central things was the relationship between 75-year-old Benjamin Zander and the children that he inspired to love music. It is just a pleasure to see. How did you discover him?
You know, when you go and you do a documentary like this that is not particularly about one person in specific, you have to cast a really wide net. And, you know, we looked at so many different people, and it really became apparent that, you know, diversity was such an important thing. Now, you know, Ben is an older white British gentleman, which is what you may think as a stereotype of classical music, but his personality and energy is quite the opposite. He's the exception to the rule, I think, as far as older white men in the film. The other two characters are quite the opposite, but you know, we came across him actually through a TED talk of his called Transformative Power of Classical Music, and, you know, developed a relationship with him and kind of took it from there. He was very inspired in what we were doing and decided that he wanted to have his orchestra part of the film. So, you know, he invited us to come to Carnegie Hall, and that started the whole journey between us.
And tell a little bit about Wirewalker Studios.
Sure. Wirewalker Studios is a film production studio that I co-own in Los Angeles. We make what we call socially conscious content. So that is content that has a meaning or a message that isn't just to make profit, but also to advance social issues. You know, and this is part of our, you know, realm of what we do. So,
And on your website, you encourage people to share their stories with you, quote, join the movement for good, unquote. So you really want your films to have legs and really inspire people. And you want to, again, cast a wide net for probably your next film by the stories you'll get from the people that interact with you on your website. So could you give the listener the website?
Sure. It's wirewalkerstudios.com. And you can also check out the website for the film, whatwouldbeethovendo.com.
And there's a question. The film does answer the question about what Beethoven would do. And when you mentioned diversity, and I did start with the older white man, interestingly enough, talk about some of the other folks. Bobby McFerrin, for example, participates in this film.
So the film is divided into, you know, two major sections. You know, not that that the viewer would particularly notice this, but there's definitely an effort to have more of a cinema verite style where we follow around, you know, three main characters. At the same time, the film is interspersed with these small vignettes of kind of talking heads, 60 to 90 seconds at a time, light and interesting. And one of those is Bobby McFerrin, the renowned vocalist. Who, you know, exudes this idea of that music is for everyone and there's no boundary between genre and the way that you have to connect with an audience. You know, that goes to say about pretty much everyone in the film, I think. That was kind of a prerequisite that you had a very open mind and were willing to discuss that. So, you know, our other main character, Dinuk Vijayaratne, he's a Sri Lankan-born composer who works in Toronto. And his segment is about bringing this DJ and string quartet together for a world premiere at the Royal Conservatory in Canada. It's a really exciting collaboration. And, you know, his kind of mantra is all about counterpoint, which is one idea against another, working in harmony. So counterpoint is something we encounter in music, but he thinks it should be used as a vehicle to how we live life. You know, two people can be doing different things, yet live harmoniously.
And agree to disagree, but also see the value in what each other are doing. You've broken down another stereotype of classical music because not very many women are in leadership roles. And you have you feature Sonia Marie de Leon de Vega, and she's the founder of the Santa Cecilia Orchestra. And her goal as well is to make classical music accessible to a wider audience. And she wants to break down barriers that audiences may face and give everyone the opportunity to experience beauty. And so you really showcase not just talent, but the ability to connect and to make music a living thing. You know the old expression, somebody would be turning over in their grave? Well, Beethoven would be jumping out of his grave and dancing with the various people in this film. He'd be very proud of, I think, what you've put together.
Well, we hope so, definitely. And, you know, I think it's important to note that on the surface, this is just, you know, could seem like it's just a film about classical music. But really, I think it's more about, you know, why we create art in the first place, why we communicate with each other about, you know, breaking down the idea of hierarchy and one person is in charge and everyone else leads behind. So and hopefully the audience will experience that.
It's also a film about community and connection. They really become an extended family in each of the areas that you've showcased. They're not competitive, but cooperative with each other. They still try to have it be as good as it can be, but not at the expense of anyone. They really do connect with each other in almost a familial way.
Well, I mean, it's really difficult because, you know, I grew up in this classical world and sometimes it can be very competitive and not particularly fostering a community. You know, everyone's doing their own thing and you go into your practice room and you don't talk to your neighbor and you come out when you're done, right? And I try to have a huge effort to avoid that in any way. And I think we can, as creators, we can hope that what we put out in the world is what we hope for the world, right? So I think what's in this film is our hope for what art can mean, right? And if that means it's collaborative and it's communication between two people that isn't necessarily based off money or power, that's great. And so it's kind of, I would say, more of a prerequisite. You know, you get to be in the film if you've got an open mind and you want to share something that other people can learn from. That's not just about yourself.
Well, and you sure honed in on those people who, I mean, it was so well cast. I think everyone in the film shared your philosophy and have had the opportunity and created the opportunity for others to have the whole be greater than the sum of its parts in working together and in showing their own energy and inspiration and connection to the art, to the music. What's next for you?
Well, I mean, we have a roster of projects as part of Wirewalker Studios. You know, this film is still in the midst of its festival run, so we have an exciting festival tour coming up this next few months. It'll end in December in China. It's going to be in Japan in October and Boston and Montreal. There's definitely still a lot left with this project. And then hopefully on to, you know, a broader distribution where people can actually get a chance to see it who don't come to the festival.
Well, you know what I picture, actually? I picture this distribution going into schools and music programs in schools and inspiring every orchestra in the country. Why not start there?
Already have, but that's exactly the plan.
We have just a few moments left. Is there anything I haven't asked you that our listeners, in anticipation to seeing What Would Beethoven Do, anything more that you might want to have them know in advance?
I mean, I would hope that, you know, I feel like many great films can deconstruct a topic very strongly and convey a perspective on a certain issue. But I would say that if you're interested in viewing a film that doesn't only break down a topic but has something deeper to say, that you might be, you know, satisfied by seeing this film. You know, I always find the best films that I watch are ones that I'm still thinking about when I walk away from them, that have something meaningful to say. And, you know, while classical music might not be a very flashy topic or something that is, you know, on the minds of many people right now, I feel like the film will still leave you quite satisfied. So,
and I would say it's a good counterpoint to all the horrible stuff going on in the world right now.
Exactly.
If you want to come out of a film hopeful and happy about humankind, this is the film to see. So thank you again, Jonathan Kaiser. Look forward to meeting you in person at our film festival. Thanks for speaking with us today. This is KPTZ 91.9. Port Townsend, Marcia Pearlstein, your friendly neighborhood interviewer, signing off.
The responsibility is really on us. We got to bring people. We have to be excited to share it with them.
This stuff is exciting. It's visceral.
Fascinating collaborations of the 21st century was happening on May 23rd between the FERA Quartet, four composers, and DJ artist Scratch Bastard.
It doesn't matter if you understand it or not. Are you moved by the melodies? Are you moved by the playing?
Something sounds like pop music combined with classical music, fine. It moves me. It hits me in the heart, and I believe in it. And it doesn't matter.
Hi, this is Chris Wilson, and today we are going to be talking to Emily Linden, and she's the director of a movie that's going to be part of our Port Townsend Film Festival. You'll get two opportunities to see the movie, one on Saturday at 6 p.m. and one on Sunday, 9:30 in the morning. And the movie is part of a personal view series of shorts, Let's Get Personal, and it's called Unslut. Yes, you heard me correctly. It's called Unslut. And the Unslut project is a wonderful project that Emily has worked on and dedicated a lot of years to, and it's culminated in this movie. So welcome, Emily. Thank you for being here.
Thanks, Chris.
Tell us a little bit about how the project began. How did it come to fruition, and what does it mean personally for you?
I started the Unslut project about 3.5 years ago, and I started it by sharing my personal diaries from when I was labeled the school slut, starting at about age 11, and throughout my middle school career. I posted those online as a blog, and I decided to do such a personal, somewhat bizarre thing because I had heard news stories about girls who had been labeled sluts in their school, and sometimes the reasoning their classmates had was because they had developed first and had breasts before their classmates did, and that was my case. In the worst case scenarios, it was because they had been sexually assaulted by their classmates and were then labeled a slut after that event in order to somehow justify it or blame them for what had happened to them. So these girls who were going through something similar to what I'd gone through made the news after they died because they had taken their own lives because of this horrible ongoing sexual bullying they were experiencing. And so reading those news stories is really what made it necessary. I felt really compelled to share what I had gone through at that time in order to put my story out there and demonstrate what happens to you in middle school or high school or at any point in your life when someone else decides they want to label you as a slut and they're going to make that your reputation and define you that way. That doesn't have to have any bearing on who you become as a person and the type of life you lead and the amount of success you have. So I felt that by sharing in my own words at that time, in the form of these diaries, I could demonstrate what it's like to be a girl going through that type of bullying. And also through my annotations and context that I provide in the book version, I'm able to demonstrate, you know, the hindsight that I have and what I've learned looking back as a now 30-year-old woman on what it was like at that time and some of the similarities that I have in common with other people who've gone through similar things. And once I put my diary online, this is again back in 2013, it was like the floodgates had opened. It was an invitation for, and it served as an invitation. It kind of gave permission for women all over the world and all different ages, generations and backgrounds and races to start sending their stories to me. So I kind of accidentally became a collector of these personal experiences of survival of sexual shaming.
Mm-hmm. So these terms, first of all, slut is certainly not a new term. We've all heard it, and many of us have been called it. But sexual bullying and slut shaming, these are is new terminology to me, and I'd like you to talk about it, especially in the cyber age, and how explosive and powerful these kinds of criticisms against women can be.
Slut shaming, yeah. I define it as, first of all, whenever I write the word slut shaming, I always put slut firmly within quotation marks because I don't buy into this concept that a slut is something that exists. I think it's just a catch-all insult for women and girls in order to remind us that we are still, in this day and age, defined ultimately according to other people's perceptions of us, and that includes our sexuality. So I always write the word slut in quotation marks, and I use the term slut-shaming to mean implying or saying outright that a girl or woman should feel guilty or inferior somehow for her real or perceived sexual behavior. So slut-shaming happens often to girls who have never been sexually active, never even held hands with a boy or kissed a boy. It's all dependent upon someone else's perception of them and a judgment that they are somehow outside of the norm of whatever the person doing the shaming thinks they ought to be. And sexual bullying often looks like slut-shaming. There's a lot of overlap, but bullying requires a power imbalance. So, for instance, you know, celebrities can be slut-shamed online, but it's not necessarily bullying if a random Twitter user sends a mean tweet to Kim Kardashian or something. I mean, there's an inherent power imbalance there, and it isn't against Kim Kardashian. And so sexual bullying is a term I use mostly to talk about bullying that goes on in schools, in middle schools and high schools, that has something to do with the target's perceived sexuality.
Mm-hmm. I think that these terms and the use of these terms may help, really help people, women and girls, who are unaware of themselves as victims. They think perhaps that this is just, of course, I deserve this, or yes, maybe you know, it's treated lightly. And I think that your writing and also this movie is going to help a lot of people. So the project is really going to spread this year through being able to see the movie. First of all, you don't have to go be here at the film festival. How can you find out more about the Unslut Project? Tell us about your website, for example.
Sure. Yeah, so all of the stories that people have been submitting to me are, in addition to a lot of other content, are gathered on unslutproject.com, which is the main site, the hub. We have links there to learn more about the film if anyone who's listening thinks they might want to come and see it at the festival. And we also have ways to watch the film online in case you're unable to make the live screening where I'll be there for a Q&A and participate in the conversation. You can always watch it in your own living room. It's available on iTunes and on demand. And so, yeah, it's just really important to me that people are able to watch and engage with this film, which is about bringing real women, authentic women's stories and their experiences of surviving and in some cases not surviving sexual shaming to light and to use them as a conversation starter. And so that's what I'm really hoping you do with the live screening.
And also people can go ahead and plan a screening event. So it could be for a discussion group or a church or in a school situation. And there also is a discussion guide, right, that you have created along with another organization. So tell us about the guides that you've written and some of the other material you've put out.
The discussion guide exists online to go with the film. I love to attend screenings, and I often do at colleges and high schools and will facilitate conversation, but I can't be everywhere. Yeah. And so I love the idea that people are screening this film with their groups of friends or with clubs or, as you said, with their churches or school systems, and using the discussion guide as a way to host a conversation afterward. The film is just 40 minutes long, and I kept it short so that it could fit into a classroom time or in any type of gathering or screening event, there would be time afterward kind of built in for follow-up conversations because they're so necessary.
Yeah, really important. I guess I was thinking about the brochure, What to Do If You're Sexually Bullied. And I think that's a wonderful resource.
Oh, yeah, that's on the site. I don't have it in front of me, though. I don't know if I can speak specifically to that.
But it is available, and you can find out about it on the site, written by yourself and the Crisis Prevention Institute. It's part of a bullying prevention tip kit. And you also write a column in Teen Vogue.
Just over the past few years since I've started this project, I've been able to speak to so many young women and girls and so many parents. And I think I have this unique perspective on the types of communication barriers that block people from speaking openly about their experiences and that really stand in our way of making progress culturally and on the smaller scale, even in our families and friend groups. And so I love the chance to write for Teen Vogue. I have a bunch of those columns up on the site, and I'm hoping that they'll be used to start conversations between parents and children. I'm hoping that a young girl or a young woman who's subscribed to Teen Vogue might read it and bring it to her mom, or that her mom might find it and bring it to her daughter. I think that often, because it's such an awkward thing to talk about still, sexuality in general, let alone being targeted and bullied as a slut, we need facilitators to open up those lines of communication that are so important to overcoming that type of label. And so that's why I try to write as much as I can, including the Teen Vogue column, where I write about sexting and all different types of issues that young women deal with today that their parents probably didn't, just to try to create that chance for a conversation that can really matter.
Thank you. As part of the Port Townsend Film Festival programming here on KPTZ 91.9 FM, we're talking to Emily Linden, and she's the director of a movie, a short movie called Unslut, a documentary film. Let's talk some more about the movie. How did you find the people and decide to shape the movie and interview them? How did that all come about?
Well, all of the people in the film have overcome or suffered through some kind of slut shaming or sexual bullying. The film revolves around the story of a girl named Rehtaeh Parsons, who was gang raped by her classmates and then committed suicide a year and a half later because she had been slut shamed. Rather than receiving any type of support from the police or from her community that she needed. So her story was one of the news headlines that inspired me to start the Unslut Project in the first place. Mm-hmm. And so I reached out to her family immediately to see if they'd be interested about their experiences. And they were. So we flew to Halifax in Nova Scotia to interview them. And it was such a meaningful experience to be able to talk to her friends and family and people who really are turning something that has been so tragic devastating for them into something that can help other people. The other story that people might recognize that's featured in the film is that of a woman named Samantha Gailey Geimer, and she was the minor victim in the Roman Polanski rape scandal back in the late 70s, where the famous director, Roman Polanski, had sexually assaulted a 13-year-old girl. And instead of him, I mean, he was able to flee the country. And instead of his reputation suffering or his career suffering all that much, she and her mother were villainized, and she was labeled a slut in the media, despite having been underage and sexually assaulted by a very powerful man. And so she talks about what it was like for her going through that in the 1970s, and the film kind of sets up the different ways, the things that have stayed the same, and the different ways it's hard for girls nowadays with social media and the internet, a whole other platform where slut shaming can happen. So we are trying to present this intergenerational issue that we can all be a part of solving, and we're using personal stories to do that in the film.
I'm thinking a lot about and remembering 1977 when that story came out, and just being so shocked that it turned the way it did in favor of Roman Polanski. So I'm back in time. And here we are decades later, and it's become something that not only is in the print media, but because of social media and because of the mistakes that young girls can make, it can stay with them and have such an important impact on their lives in a really negative way. So I congratulate you on your bravery of making this film, and I hope that as many people as can come out and see it and are inspired to work in our own community, to help our girls and help our young men in this community and help everyone reach out and be there. So thank you so much for talking to us on the phone today, Emily, and welcome to Port Townsend and the Port Townsend Film Festival.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I'm so sorry I have to run. I feel
we could talk
for ages, but I do hope to meet you in person.
Yes.
Sure we will. It's all a small town, so
it's
we'll
a
see
small
you.
Town. Okay, we'll see you.
Oh, good.
Okay.
Bye now.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, bye-bye.
You're a slut.
That girl's just a whore.
Don't wear that because you'll be a slut.
She's asking for it.
And I bet you're a slut.
She was a crazy slut.
You're that slut that sleeps with everyone. You're a slut.
Oh my God, she looks like such a slut.
What my mother used to call loose women. Although, of course, this can be deployed at any woman at any time.
Whether she actually is sexually active.
You have been listening to 2016 Port Townsend Film Festival interviews done by KPTZ, your radio station in Port Townsend. Special thanks to Mike Schlexer, engineer and editor extraordinaire, Larry Stein, program director with an especially extensive repertoire of knowledge of film, and Norris Petrich, station manager. Go gently. If you can't go gently, go as gently as you can. This has been Marcia Pearlstein bringing you a special edition of Film Festival and KPTZ getting together and getting the word out.
Best friends, and they pulled out their phones and they pointed at me and started laughing, and that was when I realized what he had done with the picture.
So-called evidence were pictures of me that were supposed to show what a party girl I was and how promiscuous I was.
You started an organization called the Unslut Project to combat what's known as slut shaming.
Right.
What do you mean?